Welcome to the Creative Shift Podcast. My name is Dan Blank, author of the book Be the Gateway and founder of WeGrowMedia.com. Okay, I'm really excited to bring to you my conversation with author Lee Stein. She has been a guest previously on this podcast, but today we're doing something different. Lee's novel, Self-Care, comes out later this year. And last year, she and I worked on the book launch preparation for this book. And what we do in this episode is we really take you step by step through what we did to prepare. We take you through our process for audience research, for marketing plan. We give you a lot of the ins and outs of her situation, how she's made decisions, and how she has worked with her publisher. Our goal is to really take you behind the scenes here. We are hoping that this will end up be a series of podcasts on the topic, so we can kind of give you the before, the during, and the after, but we will see where things go with this. But Lee was so honest about why she took the action she took, how she's feeling, how she's preparing, expectations, the whole thing. And I thought it was such a wonderful opportunity to take you inside the process that I go through with clients as well. You can find Lee at leestein.com. The book is called Self-Care, a Novel. She is on all the social media, at Lee Stein on Instagram and Rhymes with B on Twitter. All right, here is my conversation with Lee. Hey everyone, this is Dan Blank, and I'm excited to be chatting again with Lee Stein. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
All right, so we are going to talk about your book launch, and this is a book launch that we're talking about in progress, in process. So this won't be published exactly when we're recording it, but what's the pub date for the book right now?
So my book that's coming out is called Self-Care, and it's coming out from Penguin on June 30th.
All right, and we are recording this in late February.
Right? Yes.
Yep. Okay. So then the first question, there's so much to dig into. I'm so excited. When did you start thinking about taking realistic action on the book launch? Like how long before the pub date was it that you said, I got to get on this?
Well, two things. One is that my most recent book before this was a memoir that came out in 2016. And I assumed the publisher would do a lot of publicity, and that didn't really happen, I think, in part because of the election season. So one thing I thought about was hiring an independent publicist for my next book launch. But with this book, Self-Care, it's like so timely. It's about the wellness industry. It's kind of poking fun at Gwyneth Paltrow. I thought, like, people will talk about this book. I wasn't worried about the publicity, but I thought I should invest in the marketing of it. And I was curious about working with you. And I remember reaching out to you and thinking, like, oh, he'll probably tell me we should start working together like 6 months out from release date. And you said, I actually think you should start as early as possible. And I thought, well, of course you would say that because that's what you do for a living, is you do this for a living. But then once we started working together in August, I did so much early work thinking through the launch. And I'm so glad I started as early as I did, because now we're in February. I'm at this point starting to do outreach to some of the podcasts that we brainstormed way back over the summer. And if I hadn't have done all that prep work, I think I would feel behind right now instead of on track.
Okay, so then what's the timeline of, if you remember better than I do, and the of when we started working together? Because we did a consulting, you know, sort of our engagement in terms of that.
I think we worked together starting in August.
So that is, and that's like,
so it's about 10 months before release date. It was about,
yeah. So we worked together for several months in a row. And we were really doing the heavy duty marketing stuff. I mean, a lot of, we'll dig into everything that we've done here. But I do want to make a point though. So you mentioned this with your other book, but this is like an investment for you. It's an investment in every way, shape, and form, where this is your energy, it's your time, it's resources like money, it's focus. What was the framing of that? You know, clearly you're excited about self-care. So you're saying there's an opportunity, but what was it like for you to say, I'm going to make that investment and I'm going to make it now. Even before the world is screaming, like your publisher is not yelling at you at that point. Like no one is making this a priority. Was there anything as you went through that decision-making process to make it a priority?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I think there's this fantasy that like once you sell your book, there's like a whole team at your publisher and they're emailing you all the time and taking you out to lunch every week. And there's just all these things going on behind the scenes. But the reality is like they're working on a ton of books. My editor gave me edits and I did her edits. There were a few rounds of edits with different people. But I didn't talk to the marketing and publicity people at all that whole summer. I mean, no contact whatsoever. And that was normal. That wasn't them ignoring me. That was totally normal. It wasn't time for me to start doing anything for my book yet. And so this was work I was doing on my own. I made a choice to set aside like a pretty significant part of my book advance to pay for a marketing consultant. Like that was a decision that I made. I'm happy that I did that. And it was a time commitment. It wasn't like, for people who haven't worked with you, it's not like I'm like, Dan, like just can you just do the marketing strategy for me and then like you just do it? No, it's like conversations. It's me going through so many of my contacts over years, figuring out like who should I get back in touch with? Oh, there was that person I spoke at a conference with once who like works at a startup in San Francisco. Like maybe she would be interested in my book. So it was a lot of really time-consuming research and reaching out to people to kind of build a list of contacts that are getting first copies of this book to try and build the buzz for it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, too, because I've talked to so many writers who they say, well, you know, let me first wait to see what my publisher says. We've got our marketing meeting coming up, you know, 5 months before public. Let's wait to see what they say, and then we'll talk about if I'm going to do anything outside of that. And like that sounds so logical, especially when someone is grateful to their publisher. They feel like I've been picked, I've won the lottery.
Yeah.
And yet it's also, I mean, it's not bad advice, but it does mean that if you have any red flags or any opportunities, you're kind of at that point almost too late to do much about it.
Yeah, and I don't think I believed you when you said that until I lived it. But you're right. But so you and I worked together August, September, October. We put together this multi-page, I don't know how many pages it was, maybe 15 pages, multi-sectioned strategy doc. Then I asked for a meeting to go over the doc in person. They said it's a little early. They wanted to wait until after the holidays. And I said, no, I'd really like to meet with you before the holidays. And you helped me with this, that like the sooner we get moving on some of this stuff, the better. And they agreed. And I had the most amazing meeting with like two publicists in the room, two marketing people, the publisher, like they really came together. They were so impressed with the packet. And I just had a call with my publicist a week or two ago. And she said she's still using the packet. So doing that kind of work ahead of time, instead of waiting to see what are their ideas, like actually being able to bring them my own ideas and talk to them about how I see this book and how I see it reaching readers, I think puts me in a much stronger position than I could have had otherwise.
We're going to back up and go through that piece by piece. But before we do, I remember you saying something, I forget if it was to me directly or email, but that after that or during that, you had felt that you were getting a lot of, I don't know if the right word is attention, like attention from within your publisher that you don't think you would be getting, especially not this early without that.
Oh, absolutely. I remember I told you when my memoir Land of Enchantment came out in 2016, I knew who my publicist was. I have no idea who the marketing person was. I don't even know their name. I don't know if there was a
marketing person. To this day, you don't know.
I have no idea. I never interacted with this person. I didn't even know that. Like, I don't think I even knew what marketing was in 2016. I just knew that there was publicity and I hoped to get reviews. That's what I was hoping for, reviews. But actually, the more I learned, like, reviews can be awesome. They don't necessarily sell books. So even knowing that there's two marketing people now who are working on self-care, it's like night and day difference from my last book launch.
That's incredible. And I think it's worth noting here that you are not... You are not someone who is this wide-eyed person with no awareness of writing and marketing and publishing. You have like really deep experience in publishing, in writing, and in New York publishing, writing kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. So Self-Care is my fourth book. I had two books published with an indie publisher they did amazing on the publicity front. I had an amazing publicist, and I was like spoiled because I thought, oh, this is just what happens for every book. You have this person, you go out to lunch with them, they brainstorm ideas with you about essays you can pitch to allure, and then you get paid $2 a word. I was like in a fantasy land for like, you know, a few months, but I've never had that experience repeated. And people have wildly different experiences in book publishing. It can depend on your advance. If you get a blockbuster book advance, you get a certain level of attention. So I'm like a, you know, I'm like in the middle. I've never gotten a six-figure book advance, but I've been steadily publishing work for years.
And that's a good point. And again, we'll kind of stay backed up and then we'll zoom into the details. But I mean, I've known people publishing books, similar types of books from the same publisher, same time frame. One of them gets a ton of attention, the other doesn't. And it's a lot of factors, and you're never aware of that until it's happening. And it's a very different experience. It's not just this is what happens, this doesn't. Is, as you said, these people are very busy. They have very thin resources. And I don't want to speak for the industry, but generally speaking, they put resources to where they think they're going to get the most return on investment. And for whatever reason, it just tends to not be, we'll get equal attention to all 12 books we're putting out there. They tend to weight it more on some than others.
Yeah. And I think with this self-care launch and with the decision to hire someone to help me with the marketing, I just thought I'm going to do everything that I can. And then I'm going to know that the rest is like out of my hands. You know, I wanted to feel confident that I did everything possible. I hired you. I spent probably 10 hours a week working on this stuff while we were working together. So I know that there's nothing more I could have done. And so I feel good about going into this release date.
I love it. All right. So let's back up and go into exactly what you were doing, what we've been doing at that time. So I feel like maybe the first spot is to talk about ideal readers.
Yeah. So I came to you and I said, like, I want to figure out how to reach readers who are not writers. Because my previous experience had been running this conference called BinderCon for women writers. We had 40,000 members in our Facebook group. I made an assumption that many of these women would buy my memoir when it came out. That did not pan out. And so I thought, I was just kind of shocked that I thought I had the support of all these writers. And maybe I did have their support. You know, they wrote me nice letters and sent me Facebook requests asking for advice, but they didn't show up to buy my book. So I thought, I need a new strategy now. I need different kind of readers, and I've written this hilarious book that's all about the wellness industry that I know women are going to love, and how do I find those women?
So that, I mean, to me, that's always interesting because it's like saying, like, I talk to so many people who are certain, well, oh, this is my book, and this is my reader. And I'm thinking, wow, like, you just sort of ended that with the biggest period, like, I've ever heard in my life. Like, you just know, and there's no discussion, and I'm like, can we talk about this? Like, how do we know that? Like, we have any more details? So it's interesting to even hear that you had a big audience and this great network, and then you were saying, what's the advice? I wrote this about Billie Eilish and her brother Phineas, about these amazing pop stars, and he was answering a question, and, you know, like, have you figured out what makes a great song? And he's like, no, the more hits we have, the less I know about how to make a great song, because you realize you never know. So I just want to pinpoint that. So how did we, so what were the insights you had as we kind of explored, well, who are these readers? It's one thing to say, I want readers who aren't writers, but then what did you discover in that process?
Well, you taught me this idea of creating personas, really imagining who these different women are that would read self-care. And I think the first, I came up with like four or something, but some of them were really niche and really specific, like person who's on Twitter all day, because that's my persona, that's who I am. but you kind of gave me notes and we kind of morphed these ideas. And then you also introduced this idea of like, who's primary and who's secondary, like who's the main reader of my book. And I think that's someone who's like a millennial or a Gen X woman who kind of looks at the whole self-care industry with like a side eye, like she might buy expensive night cream, but she also resents that she has to spend so much money on night cream. You know, she has like a love-hate relationship with Gwyneth Paltrow. She can take a joke. And then, so we decided that's my primary persona, my primary reader. And then there's like a secondary reader who's really sincere about self-care, who goes to yoga classes and is going to get all my yoga references in the book and, you know, buys Glossier products and has like You Grow Girl inspirational quotes on her Instagram. She's going to recognize this kind of world of influencers that I've dramatized and built out in the book. So these people are alive in my head, and we gave them names. The sardonic persona is Rachel, and I think the other one is Lauren, I'm sorry. The primary one is Rachel. I feel like I'm offending like imaginary people. The primary one is Rachel.
Because we had so many conversations where we're saying like, well, they're definitely a Rachel. Well, these are the Rachels. What would Rachel want?
Like- yes. And the second one is Lauren. And so when I go to this meeting at Penguin and I'm like pitching them all my ideas, like they went around the table and said which one of them was Rachel and which one of them was Lauren.
Really?
Yeah. And then I sent it to like an agent friend of mine. And she was like, oh, I'm like 70% a Rachel, but I'm 30% a Lauren. And I was like, oh, it'd be so funny to do pie charts. Like, how much are you of a Rachel or a Lauren?
That's amazing. And just for listeners, just to explain the concept just a tiny bit so you can find usefulness out of it, the idea is that when you're figuring out who you're marketing, you know, who you're going to reach as a real person, it's good to have a stand-in so that as we're going through the ideas that we'll talk about, we could say, would this really engage Rachel? Like, would Rachel sign up for this? Would Rachel like that? Why would she like it? And that gave us a really good decision-making tool to figure out which ideas were clever and which, you know, but not useful, and which are we really going to double down on?
Yeah, that's so true. And you also asked me, like, where does Rachel go? Like, what does Rachel listen to? What podcast is she listening to? Because that's the podcast I need to get on to reach a Rachel. What is Lauren listening to? What events does she go to? And that really led to brainstorming some book event ideas that we can talk about more,
but they're
very still in progress, or podcast ideas. So starting with these personas, I think, was the groundwork we did to start thinking about the rest of the strategy.
And there's something really baked in there too, which is thinking of the reader as a whole person. And I think too often people dumb down how they think of readers. Oh, my reader only reads this, or it's this perfect thing. And when you give them a name and you really envision them as you are, like you thought you were offending her before, like you can really think this is a multifaceted, three-dimensional human being. And they're not just one thing. They are many things, many attitudes. And it allows you to think of them in a much more realistic way. And I think that is, I don't know, just respectful, I would say, to the idea of what does it even take to engage a reader? Like too often people just whittle it down to a follower count or a sale number. And it's like, it is so much more complex than that.
And I just read this report put out by the Authors Guild that was like pretty depressing. But one of its findings, like the amount of readership, the amount of people who read in the US is going down. So only something, I'll have to check this, but it's something like 53% of Americans are readers. So readers are precious. Not everyone is a reader. So really thinking about who are those people that are really reading books, that are buying books, or that are taking books out from the library, it's not everyone. When people, you know, and I work with writers as a book coach, and people say, well, I want my book to be universal. I want my book to be for everyone. It's meaningless. You have to really think, Who is going to the library to check out this book? What do they look like? How old are they? What else are they interested in? Have they read the whole Harry Potter series? That's one kind of reader.
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to think of the exact steps we went through, I assume at one point we went through the laundry list of ideas. Here's all the things we could do, or here's all the ideas that you've had.
Yes. And I think I also came to you saying, Dan, I want to start a podcast.
Yep.
That was one of the first things. And you said, okay, this is our proposal. We're going to work on starting the podcast.
Then what happened?
So I started brainstorming what would the podcast be about. And one of my first ideas was this idea of work wives. So women who start businesses together and interviewing them, maybe things fall apart. It could be juicy and dramatic. Then I think we thought, would a Rachel or a Lauren listen to this podcast? And then you also asked me the question, what do you want to be known for? Do you want to be known as Lee Stein, host of the Work Wives podcast? And I thought, maybe for this book, but not like for my career. I don't think Work Wives is something that's part of my brand. It's just related to this book. So then I thought, what do I want to be known for? I want to be known as someone who thinks and writes about the internet and what it's doing to us. So then I had the idea to start this podcast called Extremely Online with Lee Stein, which rhymes and sounds amazing. And I had all these ideas for different episodes where I would interview people about how something that happened on the internet changed their life. And I was excited by this idea, but I became filled with dread once I started thinking about all the steps I would have to go through to actually make this podcast. And my partner said, my partner always plays devil's advocate, which is irritating but also useful. But he said, you're making this to promote the book, but you're first going to have to build an audience for the podcast before you can even promote the book to the podcast audience.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it's going to take forever. And I just didn't want to do it. And so I thought, what do I want to do? I wanted to do something that's like more lo-fi, that didn't need such high production values. So I decided to make a zine about the internet.
So a zine is basically, because I've made zines in the 90s, like it's basically you make your own magazine and it's made often on a photocopier and you're using, you know, maybe rubber stamps, you're cutting things out of magazines, you're handwriting things, you're, it's this old fashioned thing that, I don't want to say people don't do anymore, but it's a subculture thing. It was always a subculture thing, right? Is that your historical take on it?
Yeah. So I was making zines in the 90s as a teenager, like in my bedroom with glue sticks and magazines. It like, for me, it came out of like the Rebel Girl, Bikini Kill kind of Riot Girl movement. That's how I first learned about them, through pen pals. So I haven't made one of these things in 20 years. But I got so excited by this idea. I got so excited by the idea of like making something with my hands. It's really the opposite of being on the internet, like cutting things out of paper, gluing them, staple. I got a long arm stapler, which is so exciting.
That, by the way, will be the headline for this podcast episode. I got a long arm stapler, which was so exciting. My interview with Lee Stein.
Yes, it was great. And originally I thought like, I'm going to do 12, then I had like big ambitious plans for the zine. I was like, I'm going to do 12 different issues and you're going to sign up online. There'll be a lottery system about who gets the 12 different issues and blah, 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 blah. It was getting really big. And then I thought, I'll just make one.
Well, wait. Well, before we get there, I want to back up because there's, on the face, there's so much wrong with this. You want to market something? Because I'm trying to think of what the listener is thinking, which is like, so you want to market something online. It's called Extremely Online with Lee Stein. All readers, all this stuff. You're removing yourself from one of the biggest platforms we have right now, which is podcasting. You have a big network, all this stuff. Like, you're perfect for that. And instead, you want to do something that is intentionally weird and finite. Meaning, not everyone knows what a zine is. Get it to, you can only produce a few hundred of these probably. To get it to them is a pain in the butt. You got to have an address to mail them. And then, because there's no little like button on it, you don't know if you're going to get feedback, if it will spread. Now I'm playing a devil's advocate. So, why? Beyond what you said, is there anything else beyond what you said, which was really important, which is you were excited about it?
I'm excited about it, and I also think it taps into a nostalgia for the 90s, which a lot of Rachels have. So it speaks to something in my audience that we remember. I'm an old millennial. We remember the time before the internet, so we can be nostalgic for this more analog paper culture, even though our lives are consumed by the internet. And it feels intimate to me. I thought I'll stop people from scrolling. I'll stop people from scrolling Twitter or Instagram because I'll put something in their hands that they have to actually turn the pages on. So that was exciting to me. It's kind of like retro and accessible and intimate and kind of the opposite of the internet, even though it's about the internet. So inside the zine is an essay I wrote about my experience organizing this Facebook group for 40,000 women and then leaving Facebook. And a poem by me and some collages I made out of glue sticks and newspapers, like about wellness stuff. So
that's such a huge point, is how you thought about, well, what would really engage Rachel? And you got excited. And I think that's key too, is a lot of people are like, well, just tell me what to do for marketing. Podcast, okay. Like, and it's like, well, if you're not going to put extra energy into it, it's going to kind of be middling. So I love the energy, but then you thought about like what would really get people's attention. And I feel like part of this too is like getting the right people's attention. You told me the example of the Fyre Festival, which I only knew as, oh, this was some, you know, trendy event that someone was going to put on, and it was a horrible disaster because of horrifically poor planning. But you knew about how the marketing started, which was really interesting, and it speaks to this. What's the story with that?
It's so interesting. This turned out to be like a huge scam, but it was going to be this like a very expensive music festival, and you would pay $25,000 for your private cabana. And then you got to the island and you found out it was just like FEMA hurricane tents to stay in. But the way they marketed this and made it look so polished is they had, I can't remember the name of the marketing company, but they put these bright orange squares on many influencers like Khloe Kardashian or something, had these bright orange squares. It wasn't really Khloe. It was probably Kylie Jenner. I'm an old millennial, so any young millennial listening to this is going to know that I'm wrong. But they put these bright orange squares on Instagram. So as you're scrolling through, you know, it's like avocado toast, fitness, selfie, whatever. And then this orange square makes you stop and go like, what is that? And it's like, come to our exclusive music festival. So it literally stopped people in their scrolling tracks. And so I thought about that when I was pitching the Zine idea to Penguin, because I was like, what if we get them to like actually stop and look at something else that they have to actually hold in their hands? So Penguin came up with the idea, like, don't do 12 issues. Don't send this out. They said, let's just put it in the mailing that's going out to all the influencers and all the reporters and journalists and those people. So it's going with the book. So it's like a companion piece. So some people send, I don't know, champagne and macaroons. I'm sending a zine.
And I think that that's really important too, because there's that list of like 10 best practices for launching your book. And it's like, yeah, it's send out, you know, ARCs, you know, or pre-pub copies to influencers and put in a theme from the book. So if there's a scene where there's champagne or chocolate, add that in, and it's fine. Everyone loves getting chocolate in the mail, but it's also a little like expected and boring.
It's been done. Yeah.
So it's neat that you came up with this idea that would be different, and it also would be deep. Like, this is something that includes more writing, includes an essay that you essentially made it by hand. So that's kind of cool that it turned into, or it aligned with another marketing strategy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think we should go through, let's go through the rest of the documents and we'll talk about how it was received by them. So the zine was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
But I feel glad that I'm only doing one. I think if I was doing an issue a month or even every other month, like, I don't think I'd have time to work on anything else right now. So I'm glad that that's like done and out. So that went, the mailing went out, and Penguin photocopied it for me, which was like, I was prepared. I was like, whatever they say, I'm prepared to go to Kinko's. Like, does Kinko's exist anymore?
I don't know. They exist in my
mind.
That
was like a 90s callback. Staples. I was prepared to go to Staples and make this myself.
Well, that's, I think, a really key aspect, is because I remember putting this together with you and preparing the document and then talking about how, when and how are we going to share it with who and all of that. We'll get to that. But this was like, you were on a mission. Like, I knew that everything that was in there, Lee was going to try to find a way to make happen, even if your publisher got it and said, this is lovely. Okay, so now let's talk about the real marketing plan, which they didn't do. But if they did that, I was like, this is stuff Lee's going to do. Like, yeah. She is just on fire.
Yeah, but that's fun for me. Like, if it was something that I felt like I had to do, like the podcast was starting to feel like someone else's good idea or something. Like, it was something I should do, but I didn't want to. Yeah. I don't like that feeling. I'm too rebellious for that. You know, it has to come from me, because once I'm excited about it, I'm going to follow through no matter what.
I love that. So what was the next big idea?
So then we also shifted the podcast idea, because I thought, once my partner made that point about like, you're just going to have to build up an audience for the podcast if you start a podcast, I thought, like, I can just go on other people's podcasts. I can just be a guest on podcasts. So I put together a huge list of podcasts, especially of ones that I had some connection to the host or I've been a fan for a long time. And that's what I presented. And in the meeting, they were like, oh, this is so smart. You're thinking of it like a nonfiction author, which I hadn't thought about, which is interesting, because I didn't know this, but they said it's really hard for novelists to get on a podcast. People don't want to talk to novelists. But if you can come in and I can say, listen, I'm writing about online culture and what it's doing to our mental health. I'm writing about burnout among millennials in the workplace. I can talk about topics in the way that someone writing a nonfiction book would, even though my book is a novel.
Well, I want to unpack that a little bit, that phrase of like, people don't want to talk to novelists. And why that is, and I mean, my perspective on it, I'm not a publicist, is like, I always have this thing when people talk about publicity, is like, no one wants to talk about your book. And it's because they want to talk about other things. So if you look at the media loves having an author on. Here, today we have an author today, and they're happy to hold up your book, but they don't want to talk about your book. They want to talk about some topic, and you as an author might have a unique perspective or way to talk about it that kind of shoehorns your book into what they already want to talk about. And I think nonfiction authors, the path to that is much more obvious.
Yes.
And for novelists, it's not that there isn't a way in. It's just that you have to do a little bit of yoga, mental yoga, to say, it's not that everyone's going to say, you have a book out. Tell me about it.
Right. That's the fantasy. What was your inspiration?
Yeah, and it's not you, that you won't get that.
It's a mindset shift.
But yeah, if you want to get on a podcast, it's thinking about what do they want to talk about? What are their goals? What is it about you or your book or your theme or your previous experience that you can shoehorn in here? So they'll mention your book and they'll even ask some questions about it, but it's not the headline of the podcast. The headline's not, you know, Dan Blank wrote a book, everyone. It's right. Some other topic. And then within that, my book will get mentioned.
Right. And like one way I can give is like a practical version of how I'm doing this is that there's different categories of podcasts we're approaching. So we're approaching wellness beauty podcasts. We're approaching cultural podcasts that talk about current events in the media. And so for each of these shows, I'm saying, here's what I could talk about on your show. You know, I pitch this self-care podcast and I say like, I can talk about my experience going to this like extreme exercise class as research for my novel and like almost throwing up, you know, so I can take specific things that speak to their audience because I've also done my research and listened to their podcast. That's also really important to me because I don't want to send a pitch that's just like, dear sirs, I am an author. Would you like to have me on your show? Thank you very much.
Well, and that level of specificity is, I think, is where all the magic happens because you had not just the names of the podcast, you had your degree of connection to them, you know, from zero to third degree, second degree, first degree. You had what you would pitch to them, what you thought that would be, and then contact info. And as you said, you also would have listened to them. And I think a lot of people rush through this, which is, oh, I'm going to parenting podcasts. And they download a list of them, and then they just try to, then they say, well, gosh, this is so much work. This shouldn't be this hard. And it's like, then they just send out like essentially a form letter to these people. And then they get a little jaded when nothing really happens.
I think it's two things happening. One is that I'm thinking about these personas I created, Rachel and Lauren, where do they get their media from? I think Rachel's listened to podcasts, but it's also what do I enjoy and what media do I consume? I'm actually a podcast lover. So it's not like a foreign territory to me. Like if you told me I had to do Facebook advertising, I would have said no, because I'm not on Facebook, don't support Facebook. I wouldn't have done it. But podcasts I'm very comfortable with. And I listen to a lot of different interviews and conversations. So I know what it would be like were I in the interviewee's seat. Like here I am today.
Okay, so then another of the big marketing strategies was the events.
Yes, the events. So now I think it's time to bring up our iceberg analogy.
Yes.
So I said something about, in my newsletter, I think about a book launch being like an iceberg where people see only the very teeny tiny tip of the launch, which is you posting on Twitter on your launch day, you tweeting, you know, your glowing New York Times review, asking people to pre-order. Or they see you in person at a bookstore. But there's so much more underneath the surface of the water that the author is doing, that the publicity team is doing, that the marketing team is doing, that the editor is doing that you don't see. And I think writers want to go on a book tour because they see other writers going on book tours. And my first book in 2012, I went on a 13-city book tour.
Glamorous.
Yeah, it was it was very exciting.
It is.
But I thought that was the norm. And especially as more time has passed, it's no longer the norm at all. And I can see it from the publisher's point of view. You know, they sent me to Albuquerque, New Mexico for Land of Enchantment. There were maybe 8 women that came to the event. 3 were women I knew. 5 heard me on the radio. So did they sell enough books that night to justify my plane ticket? No. So I get it that they're scaling back on who goes on book tour and why. So what I did in my brainstorming with you is I tried to think about more creative events that kind of go outside the box of a book tour, which is like me at a bookstore reading you the first chapter aloud. So I tried to think of different conversation partners, alternative venues. And this is still very much in progress. I think the publisher is kind of waiting to see how buzz builds to decide what they want to do with me. But I'm working on my own. I saw a friend on Saturday who's a yoga teacher, and she was like, let's do an event at the yoga studio.
Well, so, that's part of it, because I remember us thinking about the kind of experience that you would want to show up to or that Lauren would want to show up to.
Yes.
And so that changed it where it wasn't a reading, it was an in conversation with. Mm-hmm. And I know one thing we talked about was, well, you're on stage, but if we put a second person on stage who you respect and find interesting, maybe they're interviewing you, or maybe you're both talking about a topic. Now there's 2 draws, because it's you and then someone else. And you had brainstormed this incredible list of potential people that you would invite for each city that you were really interested in, you really respected. And then you talked about, like, well, what would we focus on? And then again, first, second, third degree connection. And then the venues that you really brainstormed, like Philadelphia, it would be here. Boston, right. It would be here. And it's worth noting, like, you have done no effort to actually line up these venues.
That's right. I was just kind of brainstorming and envisioning, and similar to the podcast, looking at different categories of podcasts, I was thinking about conversation partners from different arenas. Yeah. So what I've done in the past is I just know writers in every city and I do a reading with another writer. This has been the way I've done it. I have a huge network of other writers, but the same people come to those events, you know? So thinking about, like, who's a yoga teacher that I could do an event with at a yoga studio? Or who's another kind of like wellness influencer that I might be able to get a connection to? Or who's a nonfiction writer who's writing about the internet and it destroying our brains? And how could I talk to that person? So I kept thinking, it's like my bubble of other writers is a strong bubble. And I love my bubble, but I need to get beyond it, especially for this book.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because it's so easy as an adult who has worked really hard to create a network is to just defend it, to say, this is where I'm strong, so I'm going to do that, and then say, well, gosh, like, to start fresh with something new, it just feels like scary. So we avoid doing that. It's really cool how you kind of did that. But I will say, so the plan that you came up with, you worked out a budget for this at some point, because you were like, and it was not like, okay, first of all, wait, there are 3 levels of this book tour, if memory serves. There's like, here's the minimum. Then here's what I'd like to do for the full. And then if the full goes really well, here's the like extended list.
Yeah. Yeah, there were multiple levels of different. And the other thing I put on there is also I noted with asterisks when I had a personal connection to someone. Yeah. These weren't all pie in the sky ideas.
Yeah.
And I also put an asterisk at venues I've done events at before, because this is, again, my 4th book. I've done a bunch of readings at a bunch of different places. So I wanted them to know that I was like serious. And I wanted them to know like the strength of my network.
And the core tour, like, I forget how many cities it would have been. Like, you put a budget of like what it would cost you, and it was a very reasonable number. And I thought that that was really interesting, that idea of, and you said this with the zine, when you are motivated by an idea, suddenly you're working to find ways to make it happen, which is different than how a lot of people approach marketers, like, oh, I have to do this. And well, to do it right, we'd have to cater it in this or that. And you're like, I really felt like you were envisioning something you wanted to do. You wanted to be in conversation with this person. You wanted to literally be in the room with these other people and at this event who you'd be bringing people to them, that sort of thing, where it really felt like a labor of love to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope the next time we chat, I may have more specific updates about how in-person event planning is going, because there are a few things in the works, but... very, very early in the works, I would say.
Well, this is why I wanted to do it before, while it's still in progress. I've been doing a bunch of these because so often, if you wait until after launch, you sort of gloss over ideas. You're like, I had other ideas, like some book launch series, whatever, you know, like launch events. We didn't do that anyhow. And you don't realize at the time, you will have spent months putting effort into it and it's cut. It's like when you watch the DVD extras of a movie and you realize, they filmed five other scenes at some whole other location in another country that they spent 2 months working on that never made it to the film.
Right.
You know?
They sent me a stack. So my publisher printed these galleys. Galleys are very expensive because they're printed in limited quantities. So they're even more expensive to print than the final book.
Yeah.
There's hardly any of them. The publicists send these out. The marketing team sends them out. I get 30. I got 20 or 30. I'm sending them out. I don't know which of these packages I'm taking to the post office are going to turn into anything. I have no idea. But like yesterday, I wrote a little note. I drove to my local bookstore in New Canaan, Connecticut. I handed the book to a bookseller and said, can you give this to the manager? I'm a local author. I'd love to do an event. It's like this, you really have to try everything you can to see what sticks. I don't know if that'll turn into an event. I would be kicking myself if I didn't try.
Yeah, it's such a good point. So were there any other ideas in the packet that we haven't covered, big ideas?
No, I think that was it. It was like a three-pronged strategy, the zine, the podcasts, being a guest, and a book tour ideas.
So you didn't just pitch this as like, oh, I'm going to set up a meeting and go pitch it. Like we... through revision after revision, created a document.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept going through it, like editing, revising, taking out, adding in.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's worth it, which is like, you'd think, well, once you have your agent, once you have the publisher and the book deal, like you have to stop pitching. But like, we really approach this as like, you are pitching these ideas. You're going to get that pitch as, and like, I went through the document the other day and it's so detailed. It's like an agency put it together because you are really trying to not just say, what is the idea? You're trying to get people on board with it. And there's a different way that you write something when you're not trying to, you're trying to be specific enough to matter, but mm-hmm. also not share too much information. And can we talk about the headlines for the sections?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then I want to say something about the zine, but we can talk about the headlines. I don't remember what they are. I should open it right now. You have it in front of you?
I don't, but I have them kind of memorized. One I've memorized, which is a quote that I gave you that was not based in statistics of any sort, but that you loved, which is, at some point in our call, we're talking about podcasts, and I said to you, well, podcasts sell more books than TV. And you loved it.
I loved it.
And then I had to stop. I'm like, well, I don't have any data on that. That's just based on a lot of anecdotes of people I know have been on TV.
But it seems right. I mean, who do I know, like... millennials don't really watch TV. They stream things nonstop, but they don't watch like The View. That's a different kind of audience.
And there is also the basic fact that if you're on a podcast, it's you in someone's ear for 60 minutes versus a 3-minute segment on the Today Show, which is highly produced, and you're only talking for 20% of it.
Yeah, I don't know a single person that watches the Today Show.
So... the way that the sections ended up being formatted, it wasn't just strategy one, events.
Right. It was something like,
it was, you know, influencers show up to exclusive events. It was like making the pitch for why are you pitching these three ideas? Like, you know, I'm going to be a guest on the podcast. I'm going to create a zine. I'm going to do a book tour. Like, you don't want, you know, that sort of thing. So we really, every facet of it was promoting the reason why.
Yeah, and it's active instead of passive. So the first one for the zine was called How to Reach Influencers Beyond Their Feed. So this was the idea of stopping them from scrolling and actually holding something. Another person I was really inspired by during this process was this woman, Marley Grace, who I discovered who made a zine that got sold into a book deal, and it's called How to Not Always Be Working, and I recommend it to anyone who's a workaholic like me. But she's very like, she's like a very cool lo-fi dance influencer, zine maker. I was really inspired by what she's doing in making my own zine.
And I think that was something we were really trying to put up front, which is a lot of people now with marketing, it's, well, how do we get in someone's Instagram feed? It all devolves down to how do we get more likes or reshares? Yeah. And I like the idea of saying, well, if everyone's doing that, we're all, you know, going for a smaller slice of a smaller pie. And that's what framed the event as, this is a high touch, high quality, you know, high, you know, it's getting at the Rachels, which is a very hard audience to get to.
Yeah. So then we had, you already said this title, Podcasts Sell More Books Than TV. And then the title for my event section was Live Events Ignite Word of Mouth Marketing.
Which is what everyone wants.
It's true. I mean, that's, it's the word of mouth marketing is the best marketing and like the hardest to figure out how to get, right? Because it's organic.
Totally.
Once it ignites, it's organic. You just have to figure out how to kind of spark it.
So I remember us strategizing, okay, what's the best way to give this to the publisher?
Oh, yeah. So this is what I was going to say. So the first thing we did was I sent it to my agent, and my agent is very cool, and she represents a lot of music books, and she's very like from the 90s music scene. And I thought, like, she's going to love the zine. Like, I can't wait for her to open the package. She calls me on the phone. She was like, no one's going to understand what this is. I was like, you understand what it is? She was like, yeah, I understand what it is, but no one is going to understand what this is. I was like, bummed. But this is kind of like her role, like my partner. Like, I get excited and they like bring me back down to earth. So she's like, you have to explain what the zine is. So that was a revision we made to this deck, is that I spent more time and I used more images to explain what I'm trying to do with this zine, not taking it for granted that they would be filled with 90s nostalgia immediately. And then she also said, they aren't going to give you any money for a book tour. And I said, okay, that's fine. But I thought, like, I'll just ask. Like,
but I do remember at one point we went through, and I don't know if it's in the deck or just in the back of your head, but we were really clear about what you're asking for. And for the zine you were asking for, use of their photocopier machines.
Yeah, I said,
which still cracks me up that was the ask.
I thought, oh, well, that'll save me a little money if I could use their photocopier. But they ended up like actually making the zine for me, which was so nice of them.
Totally. So how else did we go about? Because I remember us deciding how it'd be shared, and then it was just shared suddenly, I feel like.
Yeah, so then I sent it to my editor. And I, when I say send, I mean I was like printing this out and putting it in the mail because the zine is physical. So I made a beta version of the zine. There were like some photocopy issues, but I thought like this is good enough as a first run. So I was mailing this in a package to my agent. Then I revised it. Then I mailed it in a package to my editor. And I said like would love to talk to you about this in advance of the meeting or something. But she wrote back and she was like, I shared it with everyone. Like, it's great. Can you send me the digital version? So she didn't send me any notes or like things to, she didn't say like, oh my God, you can't say this or anything like that.
Yeah.
She just started sending it around the office. So by the time I went in person, they'd all read it and shared it. And so we could actually talk about it. Cause you and I went back and forth about whether I should like, you had all these crazy ideas that there would be some kind of box or some kind of like bottle and you would open it and inside would be the zine or there was going to be some kind of big surprise like a rabbit out of a hat. But it ended up being that they'd all seen it in advance and we could just start from there in discussing it.
Yeah, I love that like you can plan a lot, but in the end things are just going to happen. You got to go with it. And it was also, she shared it because she loved it.
Yeah.
So it was positive.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if then the next topic is like, how did the meeting go in terms of, you know, and you can, you know, share as much or as little as you want from that too, about just from that time forward, you know, what was that meeting like or what have things been like since then?
Yeah. The other thing that was in this packet was something I called publicity kickstart, which yes. was a list of journalists that I thought might cover the book. And so this is part of the ongoing conversation I'm now having with my publicists who've done their own mass mailing, is that we're always looking for, you know, someone reviews the new Goop show with Gwyneth Paltrow. We look to see who wrote that article. That person should be getting my book. So I'd been, this is even before I started working with you. I mean, for months, I'd been ripping articles out of magazines and the newspaper whenever I saw something related to the wellness industry. So the New Yorker did a big thing on essential oils. There was something in the New York Times Tea magazine about the same thing. So I'd been collecting for months names of journalists and people who write book reviews who are kind of in this sphere. And I think that's someone anyone listening to this podcast can do as well. Just look, who's covering the stuff that you're interested in?
You know what I wonder? I genuinely wonder, oh, I think it's true for some people, they resist that. They're so afraid of knowing the market because they're afraid that it's too big or they can't make an impact. And I genuinely think a lot of people avoid it because it's too scary, it's too big, or it asks too much of them. And it's so much easier to just stay away from it with hopes that something magical will happen between now and book launch.
Yeah, yeah. But maybe it's less scary to just think, like, who's interested in what I'm interested in?
Yeah.
You know, like that. I've spent 2 years writing this novel, living in my own head. And here are these other people that are, you know, think the same things are weird that I do, yeah, or shocked by the same things.
I like that.
So I had been doing, nobody should be reviewing my book that's like a friend of mine, right? So these are like these aren't my friends. These are like journalists that I maybe follow online and I read their stuff, but we aren't getting coffee together. But then there's a whole other list of journalists I do know who might pitch a Q&A with me somewhere, or who might review it in their newsletter or put it on their social media. So I had been reaching out to them for months when I was working with you and saying, this is an interesting difference between my memoir and my novel. In 2016, I did exactly the same thing. I thought about who are my contacts. I reached out to them. I said, I've written this memoir about an abusive relationship. Can I mail you a copy? I felt awkward and weird about it, but I knew I had to do it. I was proud of my book, but it was weird to kind of talk about my own life in this way, because part of promoting the book meant talking about my past. When I didn't want to talk about it, I just wanted to put it in a book.
That's a good point.
I noticed such a difference with self-care, because I'd reach out to these people. Hey, I wrote a satire of the wellness industry. I think it'll make you laugh. Can I have your address? And people would write back right away like, hell yes, here's my address. People were excited to get my email. And so I developed this whole spreadsheet of all this contact information. And then in January, I had this like confusing back and forth with my new publicist. And she was like, I think for the people you know, you should reach out to them. And I was like, I did reach out to them. And she was like, well, why don't you reach out to them for their addresses? And I was like, I did that like 3 months ago. I was like, this is the spreadsheet that has all their addresses. All these people, these like 30 people are excited to get the book already. She was like, oh my God, you already did that. That's fantastic. So then they could just go in the mail.
I love that. I mean, this is one of the big points, which is, when you are a proactive, hardworking partner for your publisher, that means you are, ideally speaking, a joy to work with, because you are making it easier for them to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't even tell you, I mean, we all have that experience in life. You know, someone who drags their feet or is like playing catch up or is unprepared versus someone who is pre-prepared and is ready to go. It is a night and day difference.
Yeah. Just overall, I think we make too many assumptions about what the publisher is going to do and the role of the author. And I think the more proactive you can be as the author, the better your chances are at reaching readers that you dream of reaching. I mean, the dream is that, you know, tons of women are going to pick up my book and laugh out loud and share it with their friends. That's my dream. And so I'm doing everything I can to make that possible.
So, you know, we're a few months away from the book coming out. What kind of like zone are you in as you, because you're still determining a lot of things, of which things may fly, or there could be dates or additional things you do. Like, where are you at right now?
I think right now I'm in the middle of beginning some of my podcast pitching. And I think I have so many, like, I'm going to throw so much spaghetti at the wall that I'm just going to see what sticks. I think in the past, maybe like with Land of Enchantment, there were just a few things I tried. So if those few things didn't work out, then like the book was out and it was over. There was nothing else to do.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely trying more things this time. And that's the other thing I don't think people understand, that you have a tiny window for the release. The next week, more books are coming out. So books come out on Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, more new books come out. If your book is released in hardcover, you get another chance when it's released in paperback, but Land of Enchantment didn't even sell well enough in hardcover to get a paperback release. So not all books even make it to paperback. You just get a tiny window to make a splash. And if you don't make a splash, I notice this myself. I'll learn about a book and I'll be like, oh, that sounds right up my alley. And I'll Google it. And it came out in 2017, never heard a peep about it. And I'm someone who's like very tapped into book coverage. I'm hearing about a lot of new releases, and there are books that I don't even hear about.
Yeah, I think that's incredible. Just that idea of that the launch window is really small. And again, it's kind of, I think, why I go back to like planning for it well ahead of time. I always remember this. I remember this isn't for a nonfiction book, but Eric Ries came out with a book years ago called The Lean Startup. And he spent a year actively out there in the field executing on marketing ideas. He said, this is a year I didn't take clients. I just did the book launch. And he's like a really smart guy. And what he concluded was he did these marketing events, you know, 8 months before a launch that he was sure he'd worked it out. This is what's going to lead to him become a bestseller. And the marketing idea flopped. And what he said was, thank goodness I figured out it was going to flop 8 months before a launch rather than just waiting until launch to execute the idea and learning at that critical moment that it was never going to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And so far, like I emailed like four podcasts last week, three got back the same day. So I'm already getting some great response, but I think it's because I spent so long thinking about what is my book about? What is my book about? And like, why would people care about it? You know, I ask this all the time in my work as a book coach, like for people to describe their books to me. Like if they want to work with me, they have to fill out a form on my website. Tell me what your book is about. And I had to revise this question because people were struggling with it. And I had to say, you know, like, for example, it is a novel about blah, blah, blah. Writers have a really hard time describing what their book is about or who want to read this book.
Yeah, I'm sort of almost like laugh crying at this point because it's so true.
And I don't mean to make fun. I mean, I empathize with this very much.
Oh, totally. And even before when you said, oh, I emailed these 30 people, I said, oh, I wrote a satire, blah, blah, blah. All I was thinking is like, you worked out the sentence that's going to engage people. You didn't say, I wrote a book about a young startup and two female partners who actually get... You didn't say, I'm just going to tell you the plot. You didn't say, like, you figured out the kind of couple words that was going to get that person replying back right away. And that is not an easy thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to test it out. I mean, like, if you're a writer listening to this, like, you have to, when you go to the optometrist and the optometrist says, you know, what do you do? And you say, I'm a writer. And they say, what are you writing about? Like, you practice, you know? You practice it a million times. Like the other line that I often give in person is I'll say, I wrote a book about women behaving badly online, which usually makes people laugh. And it can mean different things to different people depending on what your online experience is. But coming up with something easy without having to go into this tortured, you know, I'm exploring themes of identity and place in the blah, blah, blah.
Or just sort of... you know, a lot of people say, what's your book about? Oh, you know, it's totally entertaining. It's escapist, entertaining, fiction, like this sort of vague thing that doesn't really give us anything to go on either.
Right. Right.
Is there anything else with all of this that we haven't touched upon but need to or should?
I Oh, one other thing that you and I worked on is my newsletter. So I have a weekly newsletter for writers that I often give writing advice. But when we were thinking about like, what is my brand? I'm using air quotes here because I have a mixed feelings about personal branding. But what is it that I want to be known for? It's really like writing about the internet. So one of the things I did when I was working with you is I added a section to my weekly newsletter where I could kind of share articles I'm reading that are extremely online. So I'm trying to bring more of my identity and my own curiosity about internet culture to my newsletter, even though my newsletter is off also supposed to be of service to writers. But I think some interesting things are happening in the digital media landscape that are also impacting writers. And that's something I want to explore more this spring in the weeks leading up to my launch. Like, for example, how many writers are shifting to paid newsletters because they can't get paid work at magazines anymore.
And it's a good point, too, about, I mean, you said this earlier, what do you want to be known for? But also having a multifaceted platform where it's not just, I'm a novelist now, I'm a novelist, but you have the platform with writers. You are a novelist. You do have this focused topic of being extremely online where even just there, it's three things. And clearly there's more than that because like the readers, you're a well-rounded, holistic human being who's multifaceted. So it's kind of cool to see how you're able to know that, but then communicate that as one platform, as one, air quotes, brand.
Yes.
Are you excited?
Yeah. So the other big news is that I got engaged at Christmas. And so I'm now planning my wedding. So I have no time to feel anxious about my book launch because I have to plan a wedding too.
That was a strategy we brought up. No, it wasn't.
So it's like having this whole other side gig, wedding planning. But
I like it. Wait. I like how what do you do in life? I'm a writer. My side gig is marriage.
That's what it is right now.
I love that. That's exciting. Did you plan the wedding on the same month as your book launch?
No, because you have to book venues like so far in advance. We booked a venue for 18 months from now almost.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That's exciting.
But this is really sweet. So Brian, who I will be marrying, is in my memoir. He's a character in my memoir. And so this woman found me on Instagram and she found the post where I said I was engaged to Brian. And she said, I just read Land of Enchantment. It makes me so happy to see this, that you found this happiness. That was really sweet. That's like the power of the internet meets book publishing. It's really sweet.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Love it. Well, thank you for coming on and kind of taking us through this in such detail. And especially it's like, this is like that vulnerable phase where there's all the smart, awesome ideas you've worked so hard on, but we have zero idea if any of it's going to work.
So stay tuned for a future episode where we find out.
And I do think that's also just to make one final point, which is the publisher doesn't know. The publicist doesn't know. Your agent doesn't know. You don't know. I don't know. Yep. It's a bunch of people trying their best to find stuff that you are excited about, that aligns with what readers will love, and that are doable. And that's as much as you can do. You can prepare, but you can't plan for the success. Lee's novel, Self Care, a novel, comes out in June. You can find her at leestein.com. That is LEIGHSTIN. On Instagram, she's Lee Stein. On Twitter, she is Rhymes with B. My name again is Dan Blank. You can find me on social media at Dan Blank. You can find my book, Be the Gateway, on Amazon. And everything else you can find at wegrowmedia.com. Thank you so much for listening until the end.